calling. Now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania is bitten the dust. Welcome again to Cottage Talk Extra Time. I'm Russ Goldman, the co-host, and with me today will be David Holly. In this episode, we'll be looking back at the disappointing 2-1 loss for Fulham on Tuesday night at Craven Cottage. We have much to get through, and we do have a little bit of controversy, and we'll be getting to that in a little bit. But before we do anything, have to speak to my co-host. Welcome back to the show. David, how you doing?
Hello, good to be back, Russ. Nice to have a chance to talk about, the game yesterday again, and I'm sure we will do that quite thoroughly in the next 45 minutes or so.
Yeah, I look forward to it, David. And again, unfortunately for me, I was not able, as the time we're recording this, to watch the match. I believe the team just released the highlights. I watched the highlights on Sky Sports last night on SkySports.com. So I have seen the highlights. I have seen the goal. So that I can talk about. But obviously, I have not watched it. So you will be my eyes, David, and that's fine. I look forward to getting your view of this match. And let's just start here. Let's just start your overall thoughts on what you watched last night.
Well, for me, I thought it was very, very poor. I thought it was obviously it started as a complete shambles, and for the and until the point when we got ourselves back in the game, it really looked like we could get turned over very easily, and it could be a bigger score than it was in the end. But we did pick up a bit second half, but without again having much penetration. It's the same old story. We had a lot of the ball coming up to the box, but no movement, no idea what to do with it, just passing the ball sideways and ended up going backwards, losing the momentum and stuff. And, when you look at the stats, which we'll do later, the fact that we had two shots on target actually shocked me because I can't actually remember the second one. I remember the one that we scored from, but I can't remember the second one, which didn't test their keeper at all. This is a home match, and you've got to be testing the goalkeeper at least. But it was, Ross McCormack was the only one who tried to shoot, really, and he had a couple of efforts from long range, either went wide or got blocked. But really, there was this unwillingness to shoot, and just general disorganisation, really. And again, the formation, perhaps the tactics, I don't think were best suited to the players we had. Obviously, we started very, very badly. It was some credit that we did stabilise. As I say, I thought we're going to get turned over very easily here. But, we're just really lacking something there. It's hard to put your finger on what it is because we've had different coaches with different ideas. But it comes back to the same kind of thing in the end. The lack of movement, the inability to deal with crosses, the defence, and lack of wins, obviously.
Yeah, listen, it's been a tough period for the team, David. And this match, again, I didn't watch. I listened to the entire thing, and it was frustrating to listen to. I can imagine actually being there. So my heart goes out to everyone there, including yourself, co-host Mike Gregg and Emilio, and everyone else that is watching this. Because what's interesting, because we're definitely going to talk about this formation controversy, whatever you want to call it. We're gonna get into that. Because I find it interesting that we all have different thoughts on it. But it goes beyond that, and I think you really nailed it from the beginning. Again, not watching it, it's difficult, but I'm just saying in general, David, I want to give a little credit here because I think you should give some credit here to the team they played, to Mick McCarthy, because am I wrong of throwing out this statement? You have one organized team that knows what they're doing, that can penetrate, can do what they need to do to get the goals they need and be very organized defensively, and you have another that, like you mentioned, is disorganized. Is that a fair assessment of what you watched?
Certainly one team was much more organized than the others, and certainly defensively. I don't think, that Ipswich causes the most problems we've ever seen up front, but they did enough to win the game just. But it was their defense, they knew how to stop us, really. And in the end, as you probably know, we reverted to route one. Basically, we took our midfield off and just pumped long balls up for Smith and Woodrow as well, obviously, and Dembele, which, unfortunately, bore no fruits at all. We had a couple of close headers from Smith, but apart from that, Ipswich dealt with everything. So our movement is so slow, and our lack of movement and getting the incisive balls in early. Teams just get everyone behind the ball and just shut us out, and we don't have a way of getting through them. you know, it was completely the opposite for the other side. I mean, they had so much space, Ipswich, really, to run at us and to get in behind us. But we had no space at all. We don't really press. We just weren't pressing. That's the thing. It's
right.
You know, it's very, very basic, very, very basic thing sometimes. You know, it's not about having skill. I mean, you can be the worst player on the pitch, but you can still run and press the opposition, try and force them into errors, hurry them. And it's just that really was missing. And certainly the way that we lined up in the 4-4-2 with, you know, Tom Kearney alongside O'Hara, Kearney's not that sort of pressing, aggressive player. It was left to O'Hara to try and do it on his own, and he struggled. You know, we obviously hope that Kearney can play in middle as part of a three. We've talked about it a lot.
Sure.
Because Kearney isn't a pressing, aggressive, sort of tackling player. He's a flair player. He needs the ball to him, a bit of space, and he can do things with it. But it just didn't work. So I think in central midfield, we were basically overrun. They made it look easy in midfield. We made it look very, very difficult. So it's, you know, it's sort of loads of different versions of organised and disorganised, really. You know, at different parts of the team, you can say that the defence was more organised, the midfield was more organised. And when you look at the stats, if you know, without listening to the match or the commentary or seeing any of it, you would say, oh, well, actually, it looks from the stats like it, you know, was an even game, should have been a draw. But I think the stats are a bit too kind to us again, really, because I didn't see it like that. As I say, it was, I think when they got their second goal, the writing was on the wall there, really. It was, we never really looked like troubling them, not seriously, from my opinion.
Okay, very good. And again, I'm just going based on what I listened to. And that's obviously very different than being there, so you could really give first-hand knowledge. So, David, I'm not going to disagree with anything that you said because you were there. You know, like I said, you're the eyes of the show right now. You're letting us know exactly what happened. And the one thing that I did want to mention, again, they talked about it on the broadcast. Sean Davis mentioned this a great deal, David, talking about the pressing of Ipswich Town. Again, how they were committed all over the pitch, how they were getting on top of us, and how it wasn't the same for Fulham. You know, again, this goes back to Stuart Gray talking about defending as 11 and attacking as 11. It sounds like Ipswich Town has that down, but we don't have that down, David.
No, that was the thing. There was a couple of times when people, you know, had a bit of a run and tried to close people down. But otherwise, we just sit back and we let them come at us too much. It's just too easy. We just, you know,
it's too passive, David, Is passive a good word to use?
Yeah, for a team that's, you know, I think someone said it last night on Twitter, a team that's sort of could be fighting relegation, it's not even a fight, you know. We're not fighting at all. You know, relegation isn't there at the moment, but it's not a million miles away if we keep, you know, on the run we're on at the moment, you know, and they're just not playing with any passion. Again, I mean, we had the absolute loony of a ref last night. The ref was the one who has the worst reputation for dishing out cards in the whole league, Football League, Trevor Kettle. He's meant to be mad, you know. Not one yellow card. You know, that's how passive it was. The strictest ref in the league, allegedly, and not one yellow card. So I'm not, you know, and I don't advocate getting yellow cards, obviously. We don't advocate horrible foul play, but, you know, there was hardly a tackle went in, really.
Okay. No, but listen, and that's part of discussing this. And based on what I listened to, you're describing what I listened to. You know, like you said, one team that was pressing, that was getting on top of the other team, and for whatever reason, the home team was more passive. And where was the fight? And that's kind of what you're describing there, David. Again, Sean Davis and gentleman Jim didn't use the word fight, but they were talking about pressing, you know, and they were talking about it a great deal, how one team was doing it. He was talking about how Ipswich Town was really pressing us, and where was the press coming from us from the forwards to the midfield to the defense. It's defending as 11 and also obviously attacking as a team too. It's basically being committed and going all for it. You know, obviously the players want to win. And they want to get after it, but sounds like to me, David, what you're describing is a little passive, and that's unfortunate, honestly. All right, David, let's move on. Let's talk about the starting 11 and a little bit of this controversy that has been going back and forth all morning with me, you, and some other people. So let's talk about this because, again, what I, you know, and I'm just going to share what I listen to. And, again, that's what I listen to. I'm not there. I'm just telling you what I listen to and some other opinions I've gotten was that Fulham started in a 3-5-2. And after the goal and then a shot afterwards, Stuart Gray, again, this is from Sean Davis mentioning this, and Jim, I'm not sure if he mentioned this, but I remember Sean Davis saying, well, there's been a tactical change after a shot by Ipswich Town, and now we're going to a flat 4-4-2. David, you are adamant, along with Mike Gregg and several fans, that we played a flat 4-4-2 the entire match. So talk about the starting 11 and why you believe this is a 4-4-2.
I wouldn't say we played a 4-4-2 the entire match, because at the end it all got a bit jumbled when we started taking midfielders off and putting Corey Woodrow like right wing or whatever he was.
Okay, for the majority of the game.
Yeah, until the substitutions it was a 4-4-2. The key to this is the number one key that proves it's a 4-4-2 in my opinion, and it's Ashley Richards. Ashley Richards was always at right back. Now, he can't be at right back if we're playing a 3-5-2. He would have to be right wing back. He would have to be further forward. I mean, what's confusing the issue is that Tim Ream, when the play's on the right, tucks right in. He comes right across to the centre. And he has Garbutt in front of him and to the left, which, you know, you could think perhaps that is, a wing-back scenario, but it wasn't. It's just the way that Tim Ream was coming, or the way he'd been instructed, that he came over when the play's on the right of the pitch. When the play was on the left, he was hugging near the left touchline. But it's Ashley Richards. Ashley Richards isn't going to be one of three centre-backs at any time. He's always going to be that right-back or that right-wing-back, and he was there at right-back. I think what the trouble is, everybody wants 3-5-2 so much that, you know, we saw the three central defenders were named in the lineup, and of course we initially thought at last 3-5-2. But then when you saw how Fulham actually listed it on the official photograph they have of the team lineup, you could see, if you look at it carefully, you could see it was Richards, Stearman, Byrne, Ream, and then it was Kakanicic, Kearney, O'Hara, and Garbutt. The two banks of four. I think the other problem that people had, that the start was so shambolic, none of the fans, let alone none of the players, actually knew what positions anyone was in. It really was a total shambles how we started. Because we kicked off, of course, and you know, we've conceded this goal from our own kickoff, not from their kickoff. And I honestly can't remember, honestly, who kicked the ball off, but I assume that Kakanicic may have been central as part of the kickoff. And again, maybe people have thought something out more of that, but Kakanicic was definitely on the right wing ahead of Richards the whole time. You know, I spoke to Kaka afterwards and, you know, I said, why are you on the right? Why? You know, how comes you're on the right? So that's what the coach said. So, you know, Kaka knew his position was on the right, and Garbutt was definitely on the left. And as I say, it's only the fact that Tim Ream comes over and Garbutt to a point when the play's on the right. But there was no obvious change that I saw whatsoever. We just started as a 4-4-2. And as Mike Gregg pointed out, you know, the four defenders, you know, Ream, Byrne, Stearman and Richards were practicing beforehand as a unit. I think it's just a combination of the fact that we started very shambolically and that, you know, everybody assumed it would be a three at the back because they saw the three central defenders. And it was just the way that it kind of played out. But if you look at the Fulham website, the starting 11 is listed as a 4-4-2 and it shows a flat 4-4-2 on there. And I'm convinced that's what it was last night. And I think the one of the benefits of sitting behind the goal, which I do, is obviously, you know, it has disadvantages sometimes, but I'm sitting right behind the team. So I can see it almost as you would see it in that graphic. I can see the two banks of four, if you like, with the two forwards there. So for me, it was 4-4-2 most earlier. But, you know, talking about this starting 11 in general, we had the hope that it was going to be 3-5-2 when we saw it. But then we thought, hold on a minute, what's happening here? Because we had Kaka in there instead of Parker. How's that going to work? How will Kaka play as a wide man if we're playing a 3-5-2? Which you can't, can you? You can't have Kaka and Richards at right wing back. And then we realised that Tom Kearney was going to be central with just O'Hara And, you know, we've talked about this before, that Kenny needs to be in the middle, but he needs to be part of a three. So when you look at the 4-4-2, I think someone like Tim Ream, you were talked about in the preview show, can do a good job at left back. Probably he's probably a better left back than he is a centre back when he plays as two. And I think that really borne out testimony. So I thought Tim Ream had a good game yesterday, because there's no pressure, or much less pressure, on his heading at left back, but it's more pressure on his ground play. And I think he played the ball really well on the ground yesterday, Tim Ream. He used the ball very well. He showed that he's an intelligent footballer and he can pass well. And there was much less requirement for him to head the ball at left back. But for others, as I say, for Kaká, he's not ideally suited to playing on the right. Kearney's not really suited to playing in the middle as a two, because he doesn't do enough work, hard work. It's too much for O'Hara to do. And so, you know, the 4-4-2 was a big disappointment in the end for me when it came out. And obviously, it was a big disappointment anyway, because the way we started the match, as you've seen, if you've seen the goals, you saw what a shambles it was.
Oh, we're going to talk about that. We're gonna talk about that coming up. I definitely want to get your thoughts on that, because I watched it and listened to it. Listening to it wasn't as bad as actually seeing it. Seeing it was horrible. But again, just to go back to talking about this controversy, you know, again, you and Mike are adamant about it. I'm just gonna give you both sides, because again, I've been going back and forth with our co-host Emilio. He told me that when the whistle was blown, that Richards and Garbutt positioned slightly ahead of the back three, so that's why he thought it was a 3-5-2. Someone that works for the club messaged me to confirm that he believes that it definitely was a 3-5-2. But then at the very end he said this is my opinion. You know, I can never be 100% sure, but this is what I saw. So, and again, I heard Sean Davis say during the match that he believed that Fulham started in 3-5-2, gave up the goal. Gave up a shot. Gray then changed it from that point on, a tactical change. You and Mike are saying, along with other fans, that never happened, and that it was 4-4-2 from the get-go. And, you know, again, I find this interesting, David. And because you're talking about the website, I went on the website before the match, and it listed it as a 3-5-2, just so you know, it did. It listed it as a 3-5-2. So, again, we're talking about this, but the bigger question for me, forget about did it start off as a 3-5-2 and go to a 4-4-2. My question is, would they have won the match, David, if they played 3-5-2 the entire match, or would it have even mattered? That's my question to you.
That's impossible to say, obviously. I mean, you know, it really is, because I don't think we really had quite the right players out there for 3-5-2. Obviously, Kakanicic can't play wide in the 3-5-2 because you have the wing-backs doing that. So that's one reason why it wasn't 3-5-2. So Kaká would have had to play like Tom Kearney is in the middle somewhere behind the strikers. So we would still have been back with the same situation there, that we'd have had O'Hara doing all the work in centre midfield for Kearney and Kakanicic. And I don't think that quite would have worked. We needed an extra solid player in there. And I've heard, obviously, you know, you talked about Tunnicliffe being a big loss, and I think it is. We're really starting to see what a loss it is there. But even with Parker in there, at least there would have been a bit more grit. You know, you don't need to have Kearney and Kakanicic and, of course, McCormack dropping deep. You get too many cooks sometimes, and that's where we get to Fulham half the time. We get to the edge of the box, and it's too many cooks. You know, he's passing to him, and he's passing to him, and he's passing to him. Just take a damn shot, someone, will you? For God's sake, take a shot. Stop trying to pass it to each other, or find the perfect goal. So, for me, the 3-5-2, this is, as I say, Kakanicic, I can't see how he would really figure in a 3-5-2 unless he was going to play like the Tom Kearney role as the most advanced central midfielder. So that, again, it kind of suggests why it wasn't a 3-5-2 for me, but I'm not sure, as a 3-5-2, how well it would have worked. The only thing that was, I say, as a positive from that was I thought Luke Garbutt playing left midfield could be a bit of a disaster, but I think he actually acquitted himself quite well after the initial shaky period which he had and the team had. He actually came out quite well in left midfield. And so that gives me hope that actually they could play a 3-5-2 with Garbutt as the left wing back. Obviously, we're thinking that losing James Husband was a big loss because he was useful in that position. But I think Garbutt could actually play that. I think in anything, Garbutt in that position might suit him more than an actual left back from what I've seen of him so far.
Okay.
He did okay left midfield, certainly. But I don't know about the 3-5-2. I think for me, as I say, for the 3-5-2 to really work, you have to have two solid central midfield players and one other like Kearney or even Kakanicic or someone else who can do the advanced bit. I think it would have been a tough ask still, but nevertheless, because they were so well organised,
right,
we really would have needed to get, you know, down the wings and get behind them, I think, because through the middle, you know, battering around, we would have struggled to get through.
Okay, very good. David, listen, you're coming in a little bit choppy. Can you possibly call back in and we'll take it from there? And while you do that, I'll keep us going.
No problem.
Okay, great. All right, David will be just joining right back with me just in a few minutes. And again, I know I'm harping on this difference within the formation, but I found it interesting because, like David mentioned, we all wanted to see the 3-5-2. I was hoping that we would see the 3-5-2, and there was just a different thought. But in the end, one team wanted it more than the other. That's the bottom line. That's the thing that I don't even know if a change in formation makes a difference. David, I was just mentioning, you know, because, again, I wanted just to pose the question. If you change the formation, does it make all the difference in the world? It doesn't change the approach, meaning that one team was organized and another team wasn't after it the way that their opponent was, meaning that one team wanted it more than the other. Is that a fair assessment?
Oh, sorry. That was the overriding sort of, I suppose, summary of the night. One team was better organized and one team wanted it more.
Right. Right, exactly. And that's, you know, and that's the part of all this that's disappointing, because Fulham needed the points. This is a tough opponent. I've now seen Ipswich Town several times. Well, obviously, I didn't watch the match, but from last year, watching what I watched, and just knew that Mick McCarthy would have this team organized. I knew it would be a tough match. I knew it would be tough to break them down, and they needed to really, you know, be more, I guess you could say, I was hoping they'd be a little bit more aggressive against this team. But like you said, maybe too many cooks, maybe trying to look for the perfect pass, the perfect shot, instead of, like you mentioned, David, and I've been saying this for the longest time, teams shoot long distance from us. Why are we not shooting enough? Why are we not taking more shots? Why are we looking for the perfect shot? Sometimes you just need to shoot, and I think we need a little bit more of that. All right. All right, David, let's talk about the opening stages of this match. Like you said, it was shambolic. Talk about the goal that Freddie Sears scored in less than a minute, and he went right through the defense. It was so poor. I can't even do it justice. I'll leave that up to you.
Well, I can't do much better either. I mean, he just basically got the ball and ran through the middle past Dan Burns. Dan Burns just failed to get a challenge in or stop him, been left for dead, really. And he's got to the edge of the area. And it was a good shot, but I don't know if Lonergan, it was, you know, if he was caught cold, really, by it, whether he could have, on another day, because we've seen there's some great saves where he could have got a hand to it or not, or if it was just, you know, I think he was stunned by it, really. It was one of those where you just saw him hit it and you knew it was a goal for some reason, even though it was just from the edge of the area. But he just left everyone for dead. To say, Dan Burn, unfortunately, was the one who came out of it worse, as you probably saw from the highlight.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is from our kickoff, remember? Again, we've, you know, it's another thing that annoys me with the kickoff. Quite often we just, you know, hit the ball long, yeah, and we lose possession immediately. It would be almost better if we messed around with it and went sideways and backwards and at least kept the ball. But we
right.
didn't. We just hit it long towards the forwards, lost possession, and from kind of the right-hand side of the pitch, he's run a diagonal through the middle of Stearman and Burn and shot it past Lonergan. And it's, you know, 16, 17 seconds gone. You know, terrible, absolutely terrible.
Yeah, it was really bad, David. And you know, it's funny. I was going out to the car to go pick up my kids because I listened to the match in my car, and actually I enjoy listening to matches in the car. So I'm listening to it in the car, and the minute I got into the car, the goal had already gone in. And, you know, Sean Davis was just in shock by this, you know, could not believe that they gave up the goal so quickly and how easily. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but that's the way he described it. And Fulmer now down early in this match, 1-0. And it's funny because I thought they were fortunate not to be down more, but they're only down a goal, David. And they get the equalizer in the 14th minute. Ross McCormack scores. And honestly, he's pretty far out. I was a little bit surprised, especially when I watched the highlights of this, that he scored. Were you surprised that he scored this goal, David, in the 14th minute?
Oh, I was surprised on the basis that we weren't really in the game at all. I'm not surprised. I mean, we have seen that he can hit the ball well, but it was quite a long way out, and you would think from that range that normally the keeper would have enough time to see it and deal with it. But you know, I can't see from my natural position how far the keeper was to it. But he has effectively, it looks like, bent it round the wall, really, rather than over the wall, I think. And it's given, you know, the keeper's, you know, he's made a dive, but it's no chance. He did it very well, Ross. You've got to give him credit for that.
Yeah,
but,
absolutely.
You know, I think it was a shock. It was a shock, really, because it could have easily been more, as you said, because, you know, Ipswich have hit the bar not that long after really taking the lead. And it took us a good sort of, you know, half of the first half, really, to settle down and, you know, to look a bit more composed. So it was a real lifeline, not that long before half time, of course, to be all even. You thought, oh, maybe we can still pull something out of this. But
right,
obviously it wasn't to be in this case. But it was, you know, I think it was a fortunate route back into the match, really, because we hadn't looked like scoring a goal from open play. We've got a free kick in a position, and we've made really the most of it. I don't think you could ask for any more from Ross for that, you know, full marks for that free kick for him.
Absolutely. Listen, he is fantastic at free kicks, and I don't want to take anything away from him, David, honestly. I was just surprised by the distance. I think that's what surprised me when I saw it. I was like, wow, he did a phenomenal job. This isn't me criticizing him. This is me praising him, because I thought he was fantastic in that free kick, and deserves praise for that. I was just surprised by him doing it at such a distance. That was the surprise by me. All right, David, like you mentioned, Fulham get to the half 1-1, which I thought was huge. What's interesting, again, this is based on what I listened to. Maybe you have a different view watching it live, but the opening stages of the second half, it seemed like Fulham started brightly, and they actually get the goal in the 57th minute. I'm talking about Brett Pittman scores against the run of play to make it 2-1. But did you feel in those opening stages of the second half that Fulham could potentially get that second goal, or was this just decent play but nothing overwhelming that you thought the second goal was coming? Because again, what I listened to made it sound like there was a possibility that that second goal was coming for Fulham.
I think it was Fulham flashing to deceived for me, really. You know, we did see more of the ball, and we looked, you know, got into more promising situations. But just that final pressing, the lack of movement, the toothlessness, you know, the unwillingness to shoot. It just, there was nothing clear cut created at all. It was just a few sort of, like I say, Ross had a couple of efforts, either blocked or went wide from outside the area. But otherwise, you know, there was not really a cutting edge for me.
Okay.
I didn't really think that we were about to score or we should have scored. There was nothing that was really close. I mean, this is the telling point, really. I have Simon Patey sitting next to me in my ear, and normally if the ball gets anywhere near our penalty box, he's screaming for penalties for left, right, and centre. And he didn't even scream once last night, Simon. You know, he's the worst referee ever, I think. Sorry to say that, Simon, but you know, he makes Gentleman Jim look, you know, completely unbiased, honestly, by comparison. But he didn't scream for a penalty once yesterday, because
okay,
we never really got in their box. You know, that's the thing. We hardly ever got, apart from towards the end when Matt Smith and it was in there and they're trying to launch a few headers at him. We weren't getting in their box. They were so well drilled. They knew exactly how just to form a, you know, bank of players on the edge of the penalty area and just let us faff around with it on the edge, and they just pressed us, and then the ball goes back and it ends up going back to the goalkeeper or whatever. You know, so I really, you know, I really didn't feel a goal was coming there, although we were playing a lot better second half. We seemed to be more organized. I didn't see a goal was imminent, no.
Okay, very good. And, you know, again, that's the reason why I wanted to ask, because, again, I'm not watching. I'm just listening to it. And I'm not saying that they thought the goal was coming. They just thought that we were playing better, David. And similar wavelength to you was that they thought that Fulham were playing better, were more in the ascendancy. But like you mentioned, you were going against a very organized team that even though you were having a good amount of the ball, you weren't really threatening them, like you've described, David. You know, again, you weren't doing enough to breach them, to get past them, to give yourself a chance to win this match. And then, of course, this happens all the time. They take their opportunities and they score in the 57th minute from Brett Pittman, and they're up 2-1, and then they can just sit back and let you try to beat them. But at that point, they're completely in control. That's kind of what I listened to. Would you agree with that assessment, David, that after they scored the goal, they were in complete control?
No, that really they didn't look that bothered by it.
That's what I mean.
As I say, they seem to be very, very well organised. And although, I say, we got a couple of balls into the box of Smith later on, I don't remember their keeper having to make a single save at all. You know, really, it was that bad. They kept him that well protected. That's the kind of thing. They protected their goalkeeper, which is, you know, what we don't do, exactly what we don't do.
Yeah, very good. Again, you know, David, this is why I enjoy doing shows like this with you, because, again, especially in this case, when I don't have the opportunity to watch it beforehand, and listen, I wish that I could, but I don't mind doing a show when you're describing the action to me and see if it matches up what I listen to, and you're usually pretty spot on, and in this case, talking about the key moments of the match, you seem to be pretty spot on. Listen, before we move on from key moments, I want to ask you your thoughts on the substitutions. 66th minute, Hyman comes on for O'Hara, and Smith comes on for Kearney, and a little bit later, in the 76th minute, Woodrow comes on for Kaká. Now, you mentioned that, obviously, at that point, there was a tactical change. What did you make of these substitutions?
You know, again, they were kind of a bit strange, really, that... obviously, Hyman coming on for, you know, was a like-for-like swap. I mean, I'm a little bit surprised to see him come on, because obviously it's been quite well documented that he wants out and everything, and there's, you know, a way of opinion saying, well, perhaps he shouldn't be included if he's so, you know, so definite about leaving. You know, we don't know the situation with Dembele. That one's a little bit more on the fence, obviously. But with Hyman, it seems fairly clear-cut he's leaving. Therefore, you know, should he be taking the place, or should someone else be there? But maybe as it stands at the moment, with injuries and things, people like LVC are out, obviously, and Matilla.
Right.
And Parker had a slight knock and couldn't play yesterday. Then perhaps it's a matter of necessity that was there. So I suppose my thought was really that, if anything, they might bring him on to augment the midfield rather than just sort of basically take midfielders off and start chucking forwards on. That's what they kind of did. Obviously,
right.
You know, because we've lost, you know, taking Kearney off was quite a big shock. I thought, well, if they bring Hyman on, that might allow Kearney more attacking prowess, where we're not relying on his defence. Well, see, Hyman replaced O'Hara, and then Smith replaced Kearney, which was quite strange. That meant that we only then had in sensitive field, as we all agreed, we certainly were 4-4-2 at this point. Whatever we started at was 4-4-2 at this point. So we only had then Hyman in centre midfield, with obviously Smith coming on up front. So what happened was, of course, Ross McCormack, who's, you know, our leading goal scorer and best striker, supposedly ended up playing quite deep, very deep actually, in centre midfield alongside Hyman. So that's, you know, you can understand the sort of logic that he can do these things, these creative things, but when you're chasing a match, are you going to take a skillful sort of creative striker off and replace him with, you know, a catapult or whatever you want to call him, you know, a battering ram again up front in Smith?
Yeah.
And that was a little bit strange. And obviously we thought, well, how will Hyman cope? Because obviously O'Hara does a lot of hard work there. So it was, how will Hyman cope effectively in his own centre midfield, obviously with McCormack to support him? And then, of course, K- Kaká would be playing right wing the whole match or right midfield, they replace him with Woodrow like they did on Saturday, bringing Woodrow on right midfield. And of course, remember we had Fredericks on the bench, who is, you know, arguably a more suitable choice at sort of right midfield. So a bit strange there, what, you know, what's going on with Woodrow, why he's bringing him on there in that right midfield sort of position. But towards the end, effectively, Woodrow went up front with Smith and Dembele, so we sort of had three up front for the last few minutes. Well, actually, we had Dan Byrne up front at one point, and even Lonergan came up for a corner as well. So the desperation has set in at that point. But, you know, as it panned out, Hyman acquitted himself really well. He looked actually really, really comfortable on the ball, and he used the ball very well. I was pleasantly surprised. It's just a shame that, obviously, you know, it doesn't look like he's going to be with us, because we saw signs of what we'd seen from him previously when he'd been in the first team. And in fact, he didn't really struggle that much in centre midfield, you know, even though he didn't have much support around him. In effect, of course, the ball bypassed midfield quite a bit because we were hoofing it up to Smith at that point. But right. No, he did well, Hyman. It was just the substitutions are slightly strange, taking off Kearney, who's a creative player, you know, for Smith, and then taking off Kaká, who's a naturally wide player, albeit on the left usually, for Woodrow, who's supposedly a central striker. So,
yeah,
it was a bit strange.
Okay, very good, David. And listen, we're having some technical difficulties with your connection. Usually it's fantastic, but for whatever reason, we're having some connectivity issues. So I hate to ask, but if you could dial back in one more time when we finish up the show, because we'll just be doing stats, and then I'll ask you to rate the players, and that's how we'll wrap up the show. Sound good?
Okay, yeah, no worries.
Okay, all right. All right, and while David dials back in, and I apologize, sometimes, you know, again, sometimes we have technical difficulties that can't be helped, and David's doing the best he can, so he'll be on dialing back in, but I'll just give you the stats, and I'll ask David to share his thoughts on the stats if they match up what he watched. It sounds like they're probably not going to, because the stats look actually pretty even. Let's see. Let's start with possession. Fulham had 57.5% of the possession to 42.5% for Ipswich Town. Total shots, Fulham actually had more total shots, 15-11. On target, they only had 2-4 for Ipswich Town. Passing accuracy was 74% for Fulham. Ipswich Town was only at 59%. Total passes, Fulham were at 490. Ipswich Town was at 365. Attacking passes, Fulham edged out at 335 to 275. Key passes, 14-11 in favor of Fulham. Crosses, believe it or not, in favor of Fulham, 29-21. Crossing accuracy, slightly better for Ipswich Town. They edged it 24-21%. Corners, this one's shocking, 10-5 in favor of Fulham. Duels won, 42 for Fulham, 48 for Ipswich Town. Aerial duels won, 21 for Fulham, 23 for Ipswich Town. Clearances, 20 for Fulham, 15 for Ipswich Town. Interceptions, 14 for Fulham, 7 for Ipswich Town. Interceptions inside the box, 2 for Fulham and 3 for Ipswich Town. I'm going to bring David back on. All right, David, I just gave you the stats. You probably already know the stats. It's interesting because, like I said, on the face of it, it looks like a pretty even match. And in some cases, you could even make the argument, based on just stats alone, why didn't Fulham do better? But we all know better because you were there and I listened to it. So what do the stats tell you about this match?
Well, I said before, it was the shots on target for me is the real one. You know, two shots on target, a whole match in a home game. And, you know, I'd like someone to remind me which the other shot was, because I really can't remember our other shot on target this minute. So, yeah, that's pretty poor, because, as you say, the stats do kind of suggest the draw was fair, but, you know, I don't think we were as good as that. I think, you know, the result was very fair overall, to be honest with you.
Okay, very good, David. All right, let's get right into this. I definitely want you to rate the players, and then afterwards I want you to rate the manager or head coach, whatever you want, or interim head coach, whatever you want to call Stuart Gray at this point. He is a coach, a senior coach for Fulham Football Club. I want you to rate him. But before we do that, I definitely want you to rate the players, so go ahead.
I'm going to give Lonergan a 6. He didn't have a massive amount to do, a few sort of routine saves, a punch from a corner. Probably couldn't do much with either goal, so for me. Richards, I'm actually going to give him a 6 as well. I thought he did fairly well. You know, he accomplished basically the sort of stuff he should be doing at right back without doing anything spectacular. A couple of times he got forward and, you know, was a little bit better than usual. So 6 for me. Stearman, I'm going to give him 5. I don't think he was dominant enough. He hardly won a header. Few scary moments from him. Obviously, he was partly there at the start as well, and the second goal seemed to come from his kind of position as well. Byrne, I had to give him 4, I'm afraid, because he started dreadfully. I think he did get a bit better second half, but, you know, he was all over the place for the goal, and really, for most of the first half, he was all over the place. You know, his heading was also was poor. Even though he won a few headers, he was just giving it straight back to them and everything. Ream, I'm going to give him a 7, actually. I was very impressed with him yesterday. He, as I said earlier, he was less pressured to win his headers, obviously, at left back. There are, obviously, you know, as you can imagine, most of the balls are coming down the middle. So he has less headers to win there, but he did better. But his football on the floor that impressed me, the way that he was able to sort of, you know, create space for himself and use the ball sensibly. He showed what a good footballer he is and a good footballing brain he has. But as a left back, he's probably unadventurous. You know, he would only play really best in a situation where you have a 4-4-2 with an attacking sort of wide player in front of him, because he's not really going to do a lot of attacking. So that's why I think he's best suited to the 3 centre-back situation, where you get the best of both worlds out of him. But, yeah, for 7 for me, for him. Kakanicic, he was in and out again, as he always is. You know, he had a few good runs, but I think he was a little bit hampered by playing on the right, because he used his left foot. I'll give him 6 out of 10. O'Hara, it wasn't his finest hour. He battled away like he always does, but he was really up against it with Kearney there, not providing him much support, much to open in midfield. 5 out of 10 for me. Likewise for Kearney, really. He doesn't do the hard work, which we kind of know, but the creativity wasn't really there yesterday. He was one of the players that frustrated me a bit, because he often got into reasonable positions and then wanted to look for those extra passes all the time rather than take a shot. So I gave him 5 as well. Garber, a little bit of a shaky start. Didn't really look like he knew what he was doing at left midfield to start off with, but he soon actually really settled down and looked more the part. And for me, you know, I thought I was pleasantly surprised by him in that situation. So I also I gave him 7 out of 10 because he got in some great positions, and he also had some good deliveries as well for corners. Up front, for me, Dembele had a bit of a quiet game. Wasn't really in it that much. Had, I think, one shot on the volley blocked, but I don't remember too much else from him, really. Didn't really get the service, obviously, but I'm giving him 5 out of 10. McCormack, again, wasn't involved as much, really. You know, we weren't getting the ball up to him first half. You know, we were just losing possession all the time. Second half, and then latterly came back into midfield, and he saw a lot of the ball, obviously, that point when he was in midfield. But it didn't need for him to be able to do anything dangerous. It was so well mastered, he wasn't really finding his way through. He scored a great goal, so I'm going to give him 6.5 for the privilege of that. I guess he was on long enough to mark him, so I'm going to give him 6.5 because I think he, you know, in the short time he was on, he made a very positive contribution. Smith, I'll give him a 5. You know, it was the worst of what we see with Smith. You know, long balls, trying to get there, but no real end product from a couple of headers that sort of were positive, you know, in a way that they looked dangerous, but didn't really create that much for the goalkeeper, both wide. Otherwise, it was just too busy tussling with their centre-backs, and to be honest with you, their centre-backs won the battles yesterday.
Okay.
Woodrow, I don't think it's fair to rate him because he wasn't on for that long, so we'll leave it there.
Okay, very good there, David. All right. before we wrap up this show, I definitely want to get your thoughts on Stuart Gray. What I thought I would do is read his reaction from the Fulham website, Gray's reaction, get your thoughts on that, and then have you give a rating for Stuart Gray, senior coach for Fulham Football Club. Let's start here. Again, these are all quotes from Mr. Gray. You can read this on the Fulham website. Quote, "I think what's been happening at this football club too often this season is going a goal down. I don't expect to go a goal down after 10 seconds, and Sears went through the players as if they weren't there. That was disappointing. That's where having to chase it and get back into the game. Then it was a fantastic goal by Ross. But the most important thing, as I said to the players, it's marking again in the box. There's only Pittman in the box when the crosses come in. Ipswich has played to their strengths. They've got the ball forward early and played from there. We're not marking correctly in the box. Pittman's gambled and suddenly we're 2-1 down and we're chasing the game again. It's disappointing because we felt tonight was a good opportunity on the back of getting back into the game against Brentford. The boys were full of confidence, but to go a goal down as it proved this season, it's happened far too often. There's two sides of a game, with the ball and without the ball," Gray explained. "At the moment, with the ball, we look okay. But we're not getting the second goal, and most importantly, we're not putting teams under pressure by getting our noses in front. We're going to a team on Saturday where the players are fighting and scrapping for their lives because they don't know if they're going to get paid, allegedly, as I've read in the papers. I've got every confidence that we're going to score goals. But at this moment in time, we're leaking far too many. When asked how we solve the current issues on the pitch, Gray replied, quote, by working hard on the training ground, by pinning people, by digging people out. What's said in the dressing room stays in the dressing room, but the players know they've let themselves down. Quote, they've had a great opportunity not to get beat at the moment. It's not like a team are scoring great goals past us. They're always self-inflicted goals." I find that very interesting. Here's another quote. "We cannot control that. The only thing we can control is when we go that white line and the decisions upstairs will be made by the people in charge." He's actually, the usual questions about the vacant head coach position were also put to Gray, talking about the situation that they can't control that. And then he says, our focus is on playing. Our focus is on winning games. It cannot default the players' application. Again, sometimes people in the past have criticized certain clubs in this situation, but the players are putting a shift in. At the moment, we're just not making the right decisions in crucial times in the game. We've had such a quick turnaround getting the Brentford game out of the way, and we've had a couple of days training for Ipswich. So at the moment, nothing has been said. I'll be preparing the team for Bolton unless I'm told differently." And those are all quotes from Stuart Gray. David, what do you make of his reaction after this match?
Well, I'm not sure if I agree with, you know, the way he said they're working, you know, for it, or whatever the quote was you used there, how they're working hard, because I don't know if the application is there, really. But it must be very destabilising, and, you know, for them that you say, he talks about, you know, he doesn't know who's going to be in charge and when. You know, how does anyone know what they're doing then? You know, I can understand for the players, it must be tough to know that there could be someone different coming in soon and have different ideas. And it just seems that, you know, we're treading water. That's all we're doing, is treading water, just trying to keep going until finally something permanent and concrete is put in place. But, in fact, we're not really treading water. We're slowly drowning, aren't we, unfortunately, at the moment. You know, we had a manager that wasn't good enough, you know, and we all basically in agreement he had to go. But since he's gone, you know, we've been even worse, really, overall. It hasn't helped the situation. We haven't won a game. So, where do you point the finger at? Is it, you can't really point it at Gray or even at Grant before him. You know, perhaps the players aren't performing well enough. You know, maybe they need to sort of grow a pair, as they say, and knuckle down and fight harder. But, you know, is it the manager? Is it, you know, is it Mike Rigg? Who knows? So I don't agree with everything that Gray was saying there, but I think to a point some of it rings very true that, you know, there's a definite sort of a demoralising, destabilising effect by not having a permanent structure in place that the players and everybody knows what's going on. But certainly for me there wasn't enough fight yesterday. You know, he's talking about, you know, he said when we're on the ball we're not okay. Yes, perhaps we are. When we're on the ball we are okay, but we're not any better than okay. But when we're off the ball we don't work hard enough. in my opinion. There's not enough fight or passion there. We need to be working much harder to break other teams down, to get possession back, to stop them doing what they do. So on that one, I'm not sure if I agree with him at all.
Okay, very good there, David. Very, very good. Okay, what rating would you give to Stuart Gray?
Well, I'm tempted to give him a terrible rating because he upset me yesterday by his lineup suggesting it might be a 3-5-2, but not being a 3-5-2. So I was very disappointed when we turned out a 4-4-2 again. But also because of the things we've identified, that we seem to be weak in the central defence heading-wise. So put a third central defender in, play with three central defenders to stabilise up there, but also central midfield, the Tom Cairney question. You know, he's played him wide left where he was ineffective. He's now played him as part of a two. He should know that Tom Cairney is not the sort of player you play as part of a two in central midfield. You need an extra central midfielder in there. And so for me, okay, it's been a very short time he's been here, but he's failed to grasp the kind of essentials and the basics. And he's picked Ashley Richards as well, you know, ahead of Fredericks. For me, these are all terrible crimes, you know, terrible crimes. So I'm going to give him 4 out of 10.
Okay, very good. Wow, you're being harsh, but listen, I certainly understand that after a loss. All right, David, let's wrap up the show. Any final thoughts before we go?
You know, my biggest fear is we're now going to a team on Saturday who are demoralised and shambolic, a bit like we are. And normally, you know, we're very generous to these teams. So this is a real big match coming up on Saturday, and I think it's a chance to see who can be the less demoralised and the less disorganised. That's what it's going to come to on Saturday, really. I don't know who's going to be the best team, but it's still going to be the one who isn't the worst team. And we really need to do something because, you know, if we get beaten by Bolton on Saturday, you know, we're going to really be sort of sucked into it, I think. And, you know, we don't want to be getting into these situations. I know you don't feel that relegation is a threat, but...
I don't. I still don't. Yeah. And I'm not buying it, and I've heard and I've seen other people talk about it. I'm not buying it at all. I'm not. And I'm not even I don't even want to talk about it. But if you want to talk about it, if you guys want to go down, you want to go down that road. I understand because like you said, the table doesn't lie. They're not getting relegated, David. They didn't get relegated last season. It's a better team. They're not getting relegated. There are too many bad teams, David. Way too many worse teams than us. I know you might find that hard to believe, but there are teams that are worse than us. We're not getting relegated. But you know, if you want to worry about it, that's fine. I understand. I've seen many of our co-hosts. They're worried about it. I get it. I'm not. I'm not at all. Not even on my mind. Even after all of this, I'm not. I'm just disappointed because I think that we blew our chance for top six. I just think we're going to be right in the middle, David. If you want to go down the relegation battle, you want to talk about this each and every week, that's fine. We can do that. I totally disagree with it. I don't see it.
No, I'm not saying we'll get relegated, but I'm saying as it stands at the moment, the odds of relegation against the odds of being promoted is, you know, it's not even a comparison. I mean,
sure.
There's no chance of getting promoted, really. There's no chance of playoffs. So very
well, that's
minimal.
Not true, to be
the
honest
chance
with
of being
you.
Relegated
in all honesty, the chances of getting promoted at this point are extremely slim. I agree with you 100% on that. They would basically have to win out. Okay, I'm just saying that it is possible, but it's highly unlikely. That's all I'm going to say on that. It's highly unlikely. You're right about that. I just don't see, you know, I've seen all the talk after a bad loss, the talk about relegation. I went through that for so many years in the Barclays Premier League. We went through it last year. This team is not nearly as bad as the team last year, David. You would agree with that.
Yeah, but as you know, what I think, I don't believe we're as all-talented as you think we are either. I believe we're actually quite an average squad with a couple of talented players. And,
okay.
You know, I look at them playing, I start to think, who actually from our league or from above, obviously from below is irrelevant, but from our league or above, who would actually get sold? Who would come and buy? Who would you buy from the Fulham team at the moment? And I'm thinking, well, McCormack, yes. Dembele, yes. Kearney, maybe. But after that, I started to wonder who would actually, you know, who would a higher team than us want to buy from our squad? And I'm not sure if anyone really from our current first team. I mean, Scott Parker's too old, obviously. O'Hara has done well, but would a team higher than us take a chance on him? I'm not sure. So, you know, you tell me, Russ, who would you, if you was a manager of a team in the top half of the Championship or the Premiership, who would you want to buy from the Fulham team at the moment?
Probably Richard Stearman, probably Tom Kearney, possibly. I'm not saying from the Premier League. I'm talking about from maybe other Championship teams. You mentioned Ross McCormack and Moussa Dembele. Those would be the players. You're right. You're right. Those would be the players. And many of these players are just good players. That does not mean that they are underachieving, Dave. This is the part that I'm not – you're giving these guys a free pass. You're saying that they're not talented enough. They are underachieving. That's not a lack of talent. That's underachievement. That's on them. They're much more talented than you're giving them credit for. I completely disagree with you on that. Mike Gregg will back me on that. Mike Gregg has told me this is a top 16 talent-wise. I agree with that.
I'm not sure if I do. And, you know, as I tried to say to you the other week, I think if you actually saw them close up week in, week out, you might amend your opinion on that. I know it's difficult. You don't have that luxury or that. It's not a luxury actually for us. It's a penalty to see them week in, week out close up. It really is at the moment. You know, it's not a great place to be in. But you know, I'm not so sure about this talent. I think we talk ourselves up more than perhaps we should do sometimes. I see a lot there that worries me, and I think that I don't think we're quite as good as we think we are. And as I say, the ones you named, I don't know about Richard Stearman. I'm starting to think perhaps not with him. He hasn't done anything massively to impress me. He hasn't helped stop the leaks at the back, really. But definitely Kearney, Dembele and McCormack are talented players, no doubt, most certainly. But apart from that, I'm not so sure.
Okay, fair enough. You're entitled to your opinion. Before we go, I just want to mention, because I'm looking at my poll results. Again, these are 51 people have voted in on the poll, David. Very interesting. And the poll was, did Fulham start the match against Ipswich Town in a 3-5-2 and change to a 4-4-2 early on? Again, this is just 51 votes. 53% say yes, David. I'm just telling you. 53% say
yes. That's only because probably these people listen to Gentleman Jim and they take his word to be read. I don't know.
It certainly wasn't. Okay.
So, unfortunately, 53% are wrong at the moment.
Okay. All right, David. Great show. Great job. Sorry we had some technical difficulties on your line, and but you really brought it. Thank you very much for joining me today.
That's great. I enjoy when we have a few of these kind of arguments as well. It makes it more interesting for me, I think.
Well, all we have to do is bring up the word relegation, and then you get my blood boiling. So that's all you need to do for me.
And all you have to say is we're a talented squad, and likewise.
Exactly. All right. Let's wrap up this show. For David Holly, I'm Russ Coleman. Thank you as always for listening to Cottage Talk Extra Time. Cheers, David.
Cheers, Russ. See you later.
All right. Take care.
You too. Boys and girls.